Thanks, Everett. So next week, I'm going to talk about machine learning of conserved quantities and symmetry invariants. And so maybe some of the people in the audience might already know that a different version about the same topic of the talk. So sorry for a bit of an overlap, but that talk will be different. And the reason for that is when I started working on this, it was kind of a proof of concept project that doesn't really have a real real application. And over the last few years, especially in the last few months, there have been several papers that have been pushing these ideas to new limits, to not just find some simple conserved quantities, but find a whole set of Poisson computing conserved quantities in more complicated systems than I would ever have imagined. So that's kind of the reason why I'm reviving this talk that has been my standard talk for a year from mid 2020 to mid 2021. So what am I going to talk about? The overview of my talk is, so at the first, I'm going to define in very simple terms what a neural network solution to learning to the problem of learning symmetry invariants and conserved quantities is. And the formulation I used turned out to be Siamese neural networks that already exist since 30 years now, and they have been used in fingerprint recognition and signature verification. And using these networks, I will apply the network to simulated physical systems. One is a central potential, Minkowski spacetime, electromagnetic fields, and in the last part of my talk, I'm probably presenting the most important part, which is the additional work, in addition to mine, by a lot of smart people that pushed this idea to the limits of finally being really useful in systems where we do not know the symmetry invariants yet. So let me just briefly appreciate what we have already done. So since 2012, machine learning, especially neural networks, are really in the hype zone. So Hinton and his group won the ImageNet competition and sort of field of neural networks and machine learning in physics and theoretical physics really took off around 2016, 2017, maybe a few years later, if you consider a lot of the early pioneering work. And I think it is important to appreciate that we have already formulated solutions or reformulations of some of the most central objects or concepts in physics with neural networks. So on the one hand, we have a wave function with neural network quantum states, neural network quantum, neural network tomography. We can calculate complete phase diagrams based on classifying these snapshots of simulated or experimental data. And we can calculate partition functions using normalizing flows in the same sense as we've used Monte Carlo simulations before. And so what I'm going to highlight, even though our community is kind of small, I just want to appreciate the enormous progress and penetration that we've reached in the last several years. And so that brings me to the topic, what central physical concepts are not yet present in the machine learning community? And one of it is symmetry invariants and conserved quantities. So I'm going to give you a brief rundown of how we want to look at finding symmetry invariants and conserved quantities from a neural network's perspective. So the simplest way to formulate that problem is, given you have a set of observations of different space-time from different space-time coordinates of something, it can be anything you like. You can even look at it at in the sense of image recognition. It doesn't even need to be physics. What are conserved quantities or symmetry invariants. So let's take this example. You have two people, you can call them Alice and Bob or whatever you like, and they look at events in space-time. So they don't yet know if it's Euclidean or Minkowski, so they don't really know the metric, the quantities that stay invariant. And they look at a certain event and they measure something. And the problem is now that Alice is moving away from Bob in a moving reference frame. She's looking at the same event as Bob, and somehow they measure different things. But they still want to be able to identify what do these different things or events or objects have in common. So if you just break it down to this very simple view of symmetry invariance, that's basically the problem that we solve. And you can then go to more complicated systems. So what if these two persons look at electromagnetic fields? So you know, Lorentz transformation transform electromagnetic fields as well as are responsible for the transformation between reference frame and Minkowski spacetime. But if you assume we do not know that knowledge, we could now formulate a neural network solution to that problem, and they would figure out what symmetry invariants there are. And another common problem would be figuring out the conserved quantities of objects in a central potential. So let's formulate, look at an overview over all the progress that has been made. So as I already briefly said, I did that a few years ago using Siamese neural networks. But in the last few years, there have been a lot of papers written. So these are chronologically ordered. And so that was in 2020 until 2023. And I especially want to mention Max Tegmark's group. They have done some of the most important work in pushing this small subfield to new heights, but also other people. And so in the last section, I'm especially mentioning this work, and this work. So what is the neural network solution to learning symmetry invariance and conserved quantities? So what is our what do we require? So at first, there are different levels of symmetry invariance and conserved quantities. So on the most basic level, you have a function f is a symmetry invariant of transformation. So f is the function that we are looking for. U is a transformation that transforms something from one space into the same space, and the symmetry invariant has the property that if you apply that transformation to every object in that domain, this function stays the same. You can, if you have more information, like for example, you would know that all your objects are part of a trajectory. You can use that and employ that to simplify your problem, or you can even go one step further. If you know that this trajectory is generated by some kind of a differential equation. So a symmetry invariant f is a conserved quantity of a differential equation. It doesn't need to be t, but in physics it's conventionally t time. That transformation that we have here parameterized by t is a solution to some kind of a differential equation. And then you can even use more tools to find symmetry invariants and conserved quantities. And the most extreme step is if you know that the differential equation comes from a Hamiltonian, then you can use Hamiltonian dynamics to find your conserved quantities. And if you, maybe I might remind you, so for example, you can perform a Legendre transformation from the Hamiltonian formulation to a Lagrange formulation, use Noether's theorem to calculate conserved quantities corresponding to any continuous symmetry of that system. So as I already said, so if you go from top to bottom, you have more knowledge about the system that you can then employ that helps you to simplify the problem of finding symmetry invariants and conserved quantities. So if we want to translate this setting into a machine learning setting, we can look at it from a perspective. We have a data set consisting a lot of observations. They might be on a trajectory or not, but in the most general case, we only have a data set X that consists of several observations of the same thing, and here several observations of another thing. We don't need to necessarily have the same number of observations, and ideally, we will also be able to extrapolate towards observations or towards things where we do not have observations yet. So in that setting, it's an unsupervised learning problem. And the question is now, how do we build a neural network that becomes a symmetry invariant or a conserved quantity? So we only have, so if we look at the most basic formulation of that problem, we only have one single property that we can make use of. And that property is that for all data points that are connected by a transformation as defined in the previous slides, then this function needs to evaluate to the same value. Okay, so we do not have proper training targets or labels, but we have that property that we can use. Now, so that means we need a neural network architecture that is applied to two data points at the same time. So it's not just multimodal data where you have a data point that has different input features like sound or video, but you need features from two different points. And if you just play this through, you design a neural network, you will soon find out if you do that, neural network will just find the most trivial solutions of f of x equals constant. Yeah, of course, it's a symmetry invariant, but that's not really a symmetry invariant we want because it's kind of trivial. So the solution to that problem is you formulate it in a neural network framework that is also known as a Siamese neural network. And the most simple trainable form of it looks like this. So the Siamese neural network, big F, takes two inputs, X and X prime, and each of these inputs, X and X prime, they are put through small f neural networks, and then later, so these small networks are exactly the same. They have the same architecture and share weights. They are compared, and through this sigmoid activation function, you turn the problem of finding symmetry invariants into a binary classification problem. Okay, so you train this neural network that takes a pair of data points to return either zero if there is such a transformation, meaning you take your data points from the same bucket, or you train a neural network to predict a one if there does not exist such a transformation, meaning you pull out your elements of the pairs from different buckets. And then you train it with with normal gradient descent algorithm. And if you're done, this small f becomes or approximates a symmetry invariant. So let's look at it in a picture form. So a Siamese neural network looks like this. So you have two inputs. You have a small f subnetwork here, the same small f subnetwork here. And both of these networks project the input into a latent space. The compare network, which in our case was just subtracting calculating the Euclidean distance between the data points, but it can be more complicated. So this compare part of the neural network compares these two latent representations. And as I already mentioned, the loss is then a binary cross-entropy loss that needs to decide between if the two inputs belong to the same class or a different class. And so there are a lot of different architectures for that. So for example, there is a triplet loss where you have three, that requires that you have three networks coming in, and then you have a positive pair where both belong, where both elements of the pair belong to the same class, and a third one where the element belongs to a different class. So that helps you to balance out uneven class distribution. So if you have an imbalanced training set, you don't even need this network, so you can formulate a loss function that directly compares the latent representations, which has advantages in training, but has a so the output of the network does not have a proper interpretation in the sense of same or different. There is also another formulation where you do batch-wise comparisons. So instead of having just two comparisons, each of these networks is applied to each element in a batch, and your comparisons are then calculated from the latent representations of each of the batch members. And now let me briefly explain Siamese neural networks in the context of how they were initially intended to be used in the context of computer science, image recognition, and what they have been doing. So we have exactly the same architecture most of the time, the architecture that computer scientists use for complicated tasks are a bit more difficult, so the networks are a bit deeper. You have most of the time convolutional neural networks. Now, instead of having physical configurations, you have a pair of image, but the whole procedure of training it works exactly the same. So you have a larger latent space instead of just one. And this network was introduced already almost 30 years ago, independently in two different papers. One was by Baldi and Chauvin, and one was in Jan Le, was by Jan LeCun's group in 1994. And one of these papers introduced this network to solve the problem of fingerprint identification, and the other is signature verification. And the common nature of these problems is that you do not have training data for every single person on the planet, what is his signature. So I'm later giving you examples of how this translates to usefulness, but let me briefly mention, so this algorithm was already extended in by the Facebook research people, and has later then been used by Facebook to identify people in images. And so that field of identifying people in these images falls into the category of similarity learning or class similarity learning. So this is a machine learning technique which is used to learn the general features of a data set with labels by teaching the model which data points belong to the same or different classes. So you solve the problem of, do these pictures belong to the same class? So in this case, if it's a classification problem between cats or dogs, in this case, the network should put out, yeah, they're from the same class. But why is this network even useful? I mean, we already have neural networks that can do this classification task. So it's like, if you just imagine we all have key cards that some of us forget, or we don't have enough key cards, so someone needs to give a key card for the office access to someone else, what would be a better solution to it? And so, for example, we could install a camera at the entrance that takes a picture, and if one of the people that wants to enter belongs to the group, the door opens. So in order to solve that problem from a machine learning perspective, we train a machine learning algorithm to classify if pictures of these people belong to certain group members. So in that case, we have a training set of four people, and then if someone enters the door, the machine learning algorithm can take a picture, can say, this is Roger, and please open the door. And now we have a problem. Let's imagine we get new people. So Roger or this Bavarian guy. So in this case, we have new classes. So it might be that from new people, we have a lot less training pictures than from old people. And we might also have classes without training data. So can this be solved a bit smarter? And the idea is to use these Siamese neural networks to now predict if images, pictures from people are the same or are different. So if the neural network is trained on these pictures to tell us that they are different and they are the same, if it is successfully trained, we can now use the neural network to make a prediction about new people if these pictures from the new people belong to the same class. And in this case, the neural network successfully able to identify that these pictures of people belong to the same class, and so the door opens. And the cool thing is now that in this case, we did not need to retrain the machine learning algorithm even if pictures from this guy were not in the training set. So you can go to infinite classes, you can deal with class imbalance, and you don't even need to have training data for every single class that you want to apply the algorithm to. You only need a reference picture. So if we now apply this procedure, this algorithm, to reveal a symmetry invariant invariance and conserved quantities, we can look at the problem of identifying these events in Minkowski spacetime, and we have, as we know from the previous slides, we can now reformulate the problem of finding an invariance into a binary classification problem. So in this case, given two observations from these two different perspectives that have a that have some finite relative speed with respect to each other, do these observations belong to the same event or to a different event? This is the training problem that we pose to the neural network. So in order to do that, we prepare a data set of pairs where the positive training pairs consist of some observation in four-dimensional spacetime and some other observation that is connected by a Lorentz transformation. And in order to get the negative training data set, we permute the positive one element of the we fix this element and we permute all the second elements, so we have training examples that contain data points from different classes. And then we train the Siamese neural network to distinguish positive and negative pairs in the hope that it finds some symmetry invariance. And if we do that, we find that a Siamese neural network can accurately distinguish between these events with classification accuracy of 94% and a test accuracy of 92%. Please remember this point for later, because in some of the later works, I will show you an example of how to improve this prediction accuracy. So while this prediction accuracy is already good from a viewpoint of having an infinite class classification problem, instead of just a formulation instead of taking the viewpoint that it is just a binary classification problem, this is a really good prediction accuracy. And now comes the problem of interpreting this neural network. So maybe you remember we have this latent space where the small network f predicts its latent space the latent space representation of all the inputs. If we perform a polynomial regression, aka a linear regression with polynomial features, to fit what this neural network prediction into the projection into the latent space is, we can fit a linear model with polynomial features of degree 2 to the input features, and we find at first that this linear model can reproduce the function that the neural network has learned. So we do not need to include higher orders of linear regression, of polynomial regression, and we can read off the coefficients of all the features that contribute to that prediction. And so if we now look closely, we have one feature here that has the time squared attached to it, one feature here that has nothing attached to it, so that might be the bias of the neural network, and a lot of features that that contribute to orders of magnitudes at least less than all the other features to the symmetry invariant. And if we now assume that this is noise, then we can extract the function that the neural network has learned, and we see here this is the space-time interval that we already know from that describes the metric of Minkowski's space-time. And okay, so what is left? We have this prefactor, which are the weights of the neural network. So it can be thought of just changing the units in which the space-time interval is measured, or it can be thought of as being observed by the neural network. And this is just the bias of the neural network, or where you put the zero line from which you measure the space-time interval. So to conclude, the neural network has learned the space-time interval to infer its binary class prediction. And we can then also plot it pretty nicely so that this output from the neural network into the latent space is perfectly correlated with the space-time interval. I will later show you a picture how such a correlation plot looks like when it goes wrong. So this is a pretty good correlation. So another example might be motion of a particle in a gravitational potential. So we again formulated as a binary classification problem, given two observations of positions and velocities, do they belong to the same particle trajectory? So for now, we put it into two dimensions. We assume that the mass of all the planets are the same, and we simulate the trajectories of all the particles or all the planets in the central potential. And we use that simulation to prepare a data set of positive data where each pair is connected by the solution of the differential equation. So it's like you can basically think of this solving the differential equation as applying an operator that solves the differential equation to the initial conditions, like we are all familiar when we write down solutions of the Schrödinger equations when we applied it to a quantum state. And we again prepare the negative data set by permuting all the second pairs in a data set. And then we train the Siamese neural network again to distinguish between positive and negative pairs. And if we do that, the neural network will then again be able to accurately distinguish between what planets or what particles are the same, what particles are different. We can again look at this latent space, perform some kind of a polynomial regression, and identify the features which contribute the most to the prediction. And if we do that, we again see that there are two features that are much larger than all the other features, and we again assume all the other features are contaminated by a bit of noise, so that lets us extract this kind of a conserved quantity, which we know is one component of the angular momentum. And why did we choose this problem? Because we know that there are also other conserved quantities in that system. So while we can look at the correlation between the latent space and the angular momentum, which is basically perfect, we can also look at the correlation with the other conserved quantity, which is the energy. And so if we compare the intermediate output to the energy, we see that the correlation doesn't really work. So then that gets us to the question, okay, we have no control over what symmetry invariant this neural network learns. So we have only access to one. How do we extract all the other symmetry invariants and conserved quantities? And the solution to that problem is you need to prevent the neural network from learning the angular momentum in this case. So the simplest solution is you just make new simulations, which you cannot do with observations, of course, if you don't have a suitable control. So we simulate the problem again, and now all starting conditions imply the same angular momentum. So the neural network cannot use the angular momentum to distinguish between different observations if the angular momentum is the same for everything. So we now fix the angular momentum, prepare a training data set, train the whole thing again. We are able to solve the classification problem again pretty well with a pretty high accuracy. We can now go and interpret it. We need a larger set of features that linear regression has access to when it fits, because we have this. So we need this 1/r term to capture the potential energy. And we can again fit it to fit the neural network, fit the output of the neural network using a polynomial regression and look at the features. And we see we have a bias term. We have several terms that have a magnitude that are much larger than there are a lot more coefficients here. So we have several components that are a lot larger than all these here in the middle. We can extract these components and see that we have two contributions. One is the contribution that we already know, which is the angular momentum, and another one is the energy. So using that simple procedure, we can now extract the energy. It is not satisfying at that point, but at least it is possible. We again can look at the correlation between output and energy, which looks kind of good. It's a bit steep, but we only require that there is a bijective mapping between the intermediate output and the energy. Okay, so the neural network in this case has learned the energy to infer its prediction. So let me give you one more example before I move on to the cool papers that give a better solution to finding several symmetry invariants and conserved quantities. So in this case, we consider Lorentz transformation, the Lorentz transformation of electromagnetic fields. So Alice and Bob are both observers in different reference frames that observe the same or different electromagnetic field configurations. So we formulate it into a problem that a Siamese neural network can solve. So given two field configurations, can they be transformed into each other by a Lorentz transformation? So we prepare a data set. As we already know, we create a negative data set, train the Siamese neural network, and in this case, the neural network will again be able to predict distinguish between same and different field configurations. And in this case, the neural network learns the determinant of the field strength tensor as an invariant, but not this invariant. We can apply the same procedure to find also the other symmetry invariant. So we fix the determinant of the field strength tensor. We redo the simulation. We train the Siamese neural network again. And in this case, the neural network can again make a pretty accurate prediction. The prediction accuracy is a bit lower. And if we interpret the model through polynomial regression, we find that we now got another contraction of the field strength tensor as an invariant with basically perfect correlation. So I've already mentioned that there are some problems. So the main problem is when you try to interpret what the neural network has learned, that any function that only depends on an invariant must itself also be an invariant. So when you interpret the neural network, you could not expect that you get the exact same form of the invariant that we humans are used to. It could also be some kind of a deformed quantity, and deformed in the sense that it could be like e to the power of a symmetry invariant, or it could be that this function is so complicated that we humans cannot write down a proper closed form expression to it. So that means we have several options. So on the one hand, we can just give up human readability. So the function that the neural network learned is a symmetry invariant by itself, at least on the training domain, and can thus be used as such if you want to, for example, perform a simulation of something, want to reduce the effective dimension to make the training problem easier. Another observation was that in most cases, the neural network already learns something that is interpretable by linear regression, as we've seen. Otherwise, I could not have used linear regression to extract the conserved quantities. But I would assume that in more complicated cases, this is not possible. So that means we require a more efficient symbolic regression scheme. And I've been working on this myself. I failed, but other people have implemented a symbolic regression scheme into this finding symmetry invariance and conserved quantities approach. Another problem is you have seen my very simple and very inefficient approach in finding multiple invariants. And while in simple systems there are only a few invariants and most of them are already known, if you want to really apply it to more complicated systems, there might be hundreds or thousands of these invariants. And you cannot just choose to re-simulate your system. Sometimes you only have observations and you cannot simulate your system at all. So what do you do then? And the standard or the most promising way is you enforce this independence within the loss function of within the Siamese network loss function. And in the following slides, I'm going to give you a few examples and a few examples of recent developments, and some of them contain a solution to the symbolic regression problem and the finding multiple symmetry invariants and conserved quantities problem. So, recent developments. So, none of these recent developments is work that I contributed to, but some smart people took my ideas and did something really amazing with it. So, the first extension of my work is discovering conservation laws from trajectories via machine learning by Sung-Woon Ha from South Korea. And one thing he did, so he had the assumption that all his observations lie on a trajectory. And the most crucial idea that he had was, instead of just taking the observations you have, that you can also just take the positive training pairs that you have, and you perturb one of the elements of the positive training pairs, so then they cannot be transformed by your underlying transformation into each other anymore. So it is most likely that the symmetry invariant would evaluate to a different quantity. So instead of collecting all the training data I did, you collect the negative training data by perturbing the trajectories. And if you do that, the most important, so there are two things. A, you need a lot less training data, and B, you are now much more sensitive to changes. So, and using this, you can also be a lot more accurate. So he compared his idea to my idea, and he has shown that especially when the observations are noisy, then the performance of finding symmetry invariants and conserved quantities drops in my version pretty significantly, while he can retain his accuracy to a pretty high noise level. So that is the first important contribution. Another set of important contributions was made by Max Tegmark's group. They have already written 3 papers on it in a very short time, and some of these ideas that they brought into this are really amazing. So again, like the previous work, their data is based on trajectories or differential equations, which means you have more information that you can leverage to calculate your symmetry invariants and conserved quantities. And what they brought to the table is they developed the AI Feynman symbolic regression tool and used some components of it in this problem to build a pipeline in this whole model that involves the symbolic regression already. But in my opinion, which might be a bit overlooked when you read the paper, is this part of the loss function. So this part of the loss function enforces that different symmetry invariants are learned. So this part of the loss function means, so if this is one symmetry invariant, one potential symmetry invariant, and this is one potential symmetry invariant, you compare the gradients with respect to the inputs, and if you have the same quantity, these gradients need to be parallel. But if you don't want the same quantity, you enforce that these quantities have gradients that point into different directions. So that's how you prevent the neural network from learning the same symmetry invariant again. And the last paper that just came out this year, a few months ago, they assumed that the system that they're observing is a Hamiltonian system. So now you can use a lot more tools. And in their paper, they have shown by appropriately reformulating the loss function in Max Tegmark's set of papers in a lot more complicated form, which is why I'm not listing it on the slide, you can find the full set of Poisson commuting linear independent conserved quantities of your underlying system. And that brings me then to the conclusion of my talk. So in these last few years where we have found symmetry invariants and conserved quantities with neural networks, we find that we can interpret the neural networks to have an explicit symbolic expression of symmetry invariants and conserved quantities. If we do not require that we interpret the neural network in a human readable form, we can use the neural network itself as a conserved quantity or symmetry invariant. And instead of having just one example of a symmetry invariant that might be in a large system, we can find, in principle, all of them. Okay, so that brings me to the end of my talk. Thanks for your attention.
Thank you, Sebastian. There's time for 1 or 2 quick questions.
Thank you for the nice talk. Actually, that's very exciting. And I just wanted actually to comment that in the field of computer vision, people already looked on the problem of symmetries for a while, for example.
Yeah.
Rotational, symmetry, and so on. And there is a number of papers actually exploring so-called like spatial transformer networks. So have you, did you came across those?
I mean, I didn't look at all of these papers, but most of these papers, they tackle the same not the same. So they have a different viewpoint. I mean, you have two different perspectives on symmetry. So it's like, on the one hand, you can say, let's take for example the action in the context of physics, just so we have all an example in our mind. So on the one hand, you can say the action is symmetric under a certain transformation, and on the other hand, you can say you want to find the mathematical expression or all the mathematical expression that a certain transformation leaves invariant. And most of the computer science papers that I found, or all of them, were of the first category, like finding this, finding what transformation you can apply in order to leave a certain quantity invariant. If you know more than that, please talk to me, because that's all I know.
Like in spatial transformer networks, it's kind of a module that you plug into your neural network such that it becomes, like when you train it on some like objective, it becomes invariant to various spatial. So it's actually a very exciting tool because it's actually used in production.
Oh, okay, sweet.
Thank you.
Thanks. First of all, thank you for showing us the pictures of young doe-eyed Roger that made my day. I have a question about, so there are also invariants that are like very hard, like topological invariants. Yeah. How, in the light of all of this, what you discussed, how do you see perspective on interpretability in that space? And I know that's annoying.
Okay, I mean, I mean, I cannot even say if a neural network would find such an invariant. I don't know, but I mean, it seems like it would be useful to try. But especially the interpretability, I would find that extremely hard. So just looking at it from the perspective, I mean, we have been there are several papers with that have been classifying phases with different topological sectors, and I mean, as far as I know, the interpretability is very hard in these things. So if you look at the BK, like Coster's Tauless transition, then I remember Anna and Matt have a paper on that where they can relate their kernels to four neighboring spins, and if they increase their the capacity of, or if they basically supply that feature, then a neural network can learn that. So which might be a very, very simple example where you have this interpretability of some topological structures. But as far as I know, this is as far as we have gone so far in explicitly interpreting a mathematical expression of a topological structure.
Thank you.
Thank you for your talk. I have a question about representation of the function you obtained. You mentioned that it becomes so complex that humans cannot really comprehend. Does it mean that you start having lots of different parameters, like say 100 parameters or even more? Or is it being complex in the terms you cannot put it into expressions?
What I'm saying that in general, as soon as you have a neural network with nonlinear activation functions, then your neural network encodes all the functions in a way that are different to how a human would write it down. Let me give you an example. So if your neural network is basically a matrix multiplication plus a nonlinear function. So a neural network can, in principle, replicate a linear function perfectly if if you have a ReLU activation function that looks like this, or like this from your perspective, then you would just lower the bias. The ReLU activation function becomes the identity, and you would be able to perfectly replicate a linear function. However, when you use the same kind of a network to approximate something, a higher order polynomial, then the neural network would use piecewise linear functions. So it's just since it's just a successive application of matrix multiplication plus ReLU activation function, the neural network would just learn a piecewise linear function to approximate the function you want to learn. And of course, a piecewise linear function, if you read off the parameters of a neural network, you would basically have a piecewise linear function formulation of a let's say, second degree polynomial. So mm-hmm. that's where the difference already comes in the very simplest cases. And you can imagine that if you go to more complicated cases, it becomes completely elusive pretty fast.
Thank you.
Okay, Marcus, can you set up? And then while you set up, there's time for another question, if there is one. If not, I'll ask, because I had one. Is there no way in which you can constrain your network from learning the invariants that it extracted to do something iterative? Go ahead. I don't think.
Wait. Sorry. Can you repeat?
You like it learned the angular momentum, and then you had to train or make new data for your network to learn the energy. Not.
Yeah, I know. Okay, let me take that apart.
Is there not a way for you to train that network and prevent it from learning the angular momentum without making new data and adding something like that to the loss function?
I mean, that's what the other people did, right? In a sense.
And I misunderstood that. One of the last papers.
That was one of the last papers. Maybe.
Okay.
So I think we already. That was also. I mean, on a personal note, that was one of the things I wanted to talk about when we wanted to meet over the last few months.
There you go.
Yeah. Okay.